Hello, welcome to the Super Podcast, and I'm joined again by Stephen. Hello.
Hello.
This is like your third time on the Super Podcast.
It is. I am a regular.
You are officially now a regular. Just in case people don't remember which Stephen you are, you are also known as Big Bada Boomba.
Yes.
On the Empire Forum.
Yes.
And today's topic for the podcast is our personal favourites top five. Or our top five
movies.
Personal favourite movies. Now, this would be favourites, not ones we consider to be masterpieces of cinema. They're just our favourite movies that we love to watch.
Yeah. Just personal love affair movies.
Yes. Nothing like...
It's not like a critic's hit list.
Yeah, that's what I was going for. It's not like our professional opinions of the best movies ever made. This is our favourite movies. There's a big, big difference there.
Yes.
So, as we'll count down to our number one. So, what is your number five all-time favourite movie?
Alright, my number five is Kill Bill Volume 2.
The incident that happened at the Two Pines Wedding Chapel that put this whole gory story into motion has since become legend.
Volume 2.
Yes. And that's not an opinion that's... Well, I guess it depends which type of person you ask, but usually people go for the first one because it's more like action-packed and, you know, it's like much better pacing and all this stuff happens. But I think Kill Bill 2 is the better of the two. I know it's technically one movie, but really, I mean, they're both so different in, like, setting and tone anyway, so I'll just pick one. So it would be Kill Bill Volume 2. I think that I enjoy it more because the bulk of the story is in that one.
Yeah.
And I like the backstory of,
you know, the bride.
Meeting Bill and what happened to her. And
yeah, it's got all the stuff about Bill. It's got... her training.
Yeah, with the
Pei Mei.
Yeah, that's right. So it's just I mean, we get the whole thing like comes to a close like in the second one.
Yeah.
And we also get to experience more of Quentin's writing in that one.
Yeah,
because there's
definitely
so much more script going on.
There's a lot of dialogue in this one compared to the first half.
Yeah, the first half's more just kind of like
action,
and it's got kind of more one-liners, but the second one's got, you know, really long, like, conversation bits, and just, you know, I think Quentin is one of the best examples of a director who can write, like, a scene that goes for about 10 minutes worth of, like, speaking, and you're not bored at all.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the style of, like, dialogue that he writes is, it keeps your attention.
It's very pop culture.
Yeah.
And
very easy on the ears.
Yeah, well, for me personally, I love Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah.
And, I just eat up everything that he does, pretty much.
Do you like the second Kill Bill more than the first one?
I probably do, actually. I've probably seen it more times than the first one. And that was actually my first Quentin Tarantino film at the cinema. And this time, it's my only one I've seen at the cinema.
The only one?
Yep.
Oh, that's so weird.
Only one, and I went by myself.
Well, I remember when I first saw Kill Bill 1 at the cinemas, and it was, like, really cool and whatever, and then when I went to see Part 2, I was so not expecting it to be so different to the first one.
Yeah, it really is a lot different.
Yeah, and even though I enjoyed it, I remember, like, finishing the movie and just looking at the person next to me and thinking, okay, because it was just, I was so unexpected, like, of how different it was going to be.
Yeah.
And then I saw it a second time, and because I knew what to expect, I was able to kind of concentrate on it a bit more.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's when I kind of thought, oh, you know, this is, there's so much more going on in this one than the first one.
Yeah,
that I liked.
Yeah, definitely. So that's your number five.
Yes.
Okay, well, my number five actually consists of two movies, because I had such a hard time trying to narrow down a five, and the only way I could actually just do this list was to have two at number five. They're sort of tied. So my first one is Reanimator, which is my all-time favorite horror movie.
Herbert West is at the top of his class in medical school.
How can you teach such drivel? These people are here to learn, and you're closing their minds before they even have a chance.
What are you? He's brilliant, but a little weird.
I've broken the 6 to 12 minute barrier. I've conquered brain death.
And yeah. I don't know if you've ever seen Reanimator.
I haven't, but I am familiar with the movie poster.
Yes, well, I do talk about it quite a lot. Reanimator is from the mid-80s, and yeah. It's a horror comedy, and it's quite disgusting and gross, but it's also extremely hilarious. I can watch this movie every single day of I could watch it for, like, the rest of my life every single day and still piss myself laughing. And I just can quote the movie so well now. It's just, like, the most amazing movie. Like, I can't even describe just how much I love Reanimator.
And has it had a big, like, cult following or
anything? Yeah,
like
it
that?
Does, definitely. Okay. Yeah. I don't really recall reading many bad reviews because it's just such a fun movie. Everyone does such a great job.
Yeah.
It's so much fun. Like, it's one of the early sort of horror comedies. It came out, like, like I said, mid-80s. It was around the time when we had, like, Evil Dead 2 as well. And it blends the horror and the comedy so well, and it's just got the most amazing scenes of, like, gore, and it's got, like, this really hilarious and just so wrong sort of a sex-type scene, which involves a severed head. there's just so much awesomeness to Reanimator. So,
well, it got a 92% fresh rating at Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's pretty good.
Yeah. And for me, you just can't go wrong. And I like to show this movie to a lot of people. And I call it joining the Marcy Club when you've seen Reanimator.
Well, I think I need to see it then, because I actually had no idea what it was about. But
yeah.
It sounds pretty good.
It's about a crazy doctor who reanimates the dead with a serum that he's invented, and it's fluoro green.
Have you seen Bride of Reanimator?
I have, and I've seen Beyond Reanimator, which is really shit, but it's also really hilarious. Bride of Reanimator is like Bride of Frankenstein.
Oh, okay.
So they kind of create a woman out of dead people's body parts.
Yeah.
My other number 5 is completely different to Reanimator, and that would be The Shawshank Redemption.
Send you here for life? That's exactly what they take.
I believe in two things: discipline.
Help me down!
And the Bible. Here you'll receive both.
Andy came to Shawshank Prison in 1947.
Why'd you do it?
I didn't, since you ask.
Ah, yes. Shawshank.
Now, this is, I think, mostly a love it or hate it movie, and it's sitting at number 1 on the IMDb top 250 movies of all time.
I have never met anyone who's hated this movie.
I know a few people, and I know a few people who just refuse to watch it because of just its movie status now. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I absolutely love this movie, and the first time I saw it was before I didn't know about any of the hype around the movie. I didn't really know much about it, just that it was a prison movie and it was based on Stephen King.
Yeah.
And I can't remember if I read the novella it was based on first and then saw the movie, or the other way around.
Yeah.
Because it was, I don't know, I think it was like, I saw it when it just maybe a year after it hit video. So I can't really remember because it's been a while. But this is a movie I can watch over and over again. It still moves me, and I still cry like a baby during certain scenes.
I have only ever seen it once, and it was after all the hype.
Yeah.
And I did enjoy it, but to people's horror, I didn't cry in the end.
Well, I didn't actually cry in the end. I cried during the movie.
Okay. Well, apparently the ending was, like, the big thing. It was, like, the big finale where everyone, like, falls out, and I didn't cry at all.
It's the ending I love, but it was a little bit different to what was written. Actually, a lot of things were changed from the novella. But I don't know, for me, just everything works so well. All the actors, the music, the scenes, the colours used, all of it just kind of fits together perfectly.
Well, it's a movie I need to revisit because I don't remember that much of it.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I mean, I would say it probably helped that I saw it before there was all the major hype about it.
Yeah.
Which has come over the last few years. But I would still, you know, highly recommend seeing it if you haven't seen it or if you don't really remember it. Because I think there's a lot to get out of this movie.
Yeah, or so I've heard.
Yeah. So that's my number five. So we'll move on. What's your number four?
My number four is, let's have a look, it is Closer, starring Julia Roberts and Natalie Portman and Clive Owen, I think it was.
Yes, and Jude Law.
And Jude Law, yes.
You came to, you said, hello, stranger.
What a floozy.
Clive Owen is extremely hot in that movie.
He is, and so is Natalie Portman.
Yes, and they have a really, their scene together, actually, in the strip club is one of my favourites in the whole movie.
One of the best scenes, yeah. It's one of my favourite scenes ever out of every movie that I've ever
seen. It's one of my top scenes for sure. I love it.
I've seen that one. I've seen the movie itself about like 7 times or something, but I've seen that scene like 20 times.
Yeah.
I can't get enough of it. I know the whole thing off by heart. I think the characters and the acting in that scene are perfect.
Yeah, yeah.
And for the rest of the movie as well, I just think it's such a great realistic look at the way people are in relationships and how badly it like screws up for people.
Yeah, yeah. That actual scene is, I think it's a very truthful scene for those characters as well.
Yeah.
It kind of really shows who they really are. And
both
of them did get nominated for Oscars for their roles in Closer.
They did. Yeah. Well deserved.
Yes, definitely. It's a really good movie. I don't know, like, that it's got a wide appeal, but it's certainly something I would recommend, though.
It's definitely got some, like, I don't know if confronting is the right word, but it's got some...
Oh, yeah.
Well, I guess confronting dialogue.
Yeah.
Because they're a little brutally honest in it, in regards to, like, the affairs that they have and things like that.
Yeah, well, I know that Clive Owen absolutely goes off at Julia Roberts in a scene in this movie. And
well,
some of the
I
things he
the...
said, whoa.
Well, I saw that at the cinema, and after he was finished telling her off, the entire cinema started clapping, so...
Yeah, I kind of really agreed with him, too.
I'm scared.
You're a coward, you spoiled bitch.
I just think that pretty much nearly every scene... I mean, the characters... All the characters really do is, like... They're in a different location and they just talk to each other, but the interaction between them keeps you interested so much.
Yeah.
Because the way it's written and the way that they, you know, start their affairs and the way they start doing all that stuff, it's just so good to watch.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. It's a really well put together movie.
It is, and I think it's got a really cool ending as well.
Yeah, that actually threw me when I saw that. I won't, obviously not going to reveal how it ends, but...
No.
I think when I first watched it, I had to watch it again straight away.
Yeah, I remember after seeing it at the cinemas, I couldn't wait to get it on DVD to watch
it. Yeah, I saw it on DVD.
Yeah, I bought it first thing and I watched it again and I just thought it was so good.
Yeah, it's definitely an amazing movie and I can't, like, say anything wrong about having it on your top list.
No, it's 5 out of 5 for me.
Yeah, well... My number four is completely different, and this movie is on my list because it has so much, like, sentimental value to me.
Yeah.
I owe this movie so much when I was growing up, and my number four, I'm actually laughing, is Supergirl. Yes! Supergirl, the hated movie in the Super franchise.
I have seen Supergirl.
From the producers of Superman, Alexander Salkind presents Supergirl.
Like Superman.
He's my cousin.
Whoa.
Supergirl on a secret mission to save her world.
You've had your fun, Selina. The game is finished.
Starring Faye Dunaway, Peter O'Toole, and Helen Slater as Supergirl.
Yes.
You have seen it. Yes, a lot of people hate this movie.
I liked it as a kid as well, and I still don't mind it now.
I loved it when I was a kid. It was, like, one of my favourite movies, and it was so hard to find.
It was.
And every time I saw it, it was just, like, an amazing experience, and I just loved everything about it. Like, I always loved the Superman character, and I always wanted to be able to fly when I was a kid. So having this really cool chick who could fly and do all these cool things, it was just amazing, and I used to want to be Supergirl when I was little. And watching it now, I still actually love it. And despite its massive flaws, I still get a lot out of this movie. Because the acting is not the best. The script is awful.
Yeah.
She doesn't really do much that's fantastic, but it all just kind of works on something that's, you know, so bad that it's fantastic.
Well, I hadn't seen it for, like, years until I saw it about 2 years ago. Yeah, it was about 2 years ago that I saw it for the first time on DVD. And as a kid, I think I only ever watched it about 3 times because the video store that we had down the road had a copy of it, but it didn't work. The only times I ever saw it was when they played it on TV, and they played it so rarely, like, when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And I remember when it would come on TV, I'd be really excited because it was never on that much.
Yeah.
And when I watched it now, I mean, obviously, as an adult, you can see how obviously crap some parts are. But,
yeah.
You know, for a movie that's just entertaining, I still really enjoyed it. I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah, I thought Helen Slater, who plays Supergirl, was the perfect choice for Supergirl. Because she had the look and everything. I think she's a singer now, actually.
Okay.
Yeah. But she had the look, she had the innocence, and she just worked really well, but it's just a shame that the script wasn't better.
Have you found many people who've actually, like, seen it? Because I don't really know many people who've seen
it. Actually, a lot of people I know who have seen it do like it.
Okay.
I spent a lot of money to get the really hard-to-get copy DVD. It's two-disc edition.
Yeah.
It's got two different versions, one's longer than the other.
Okay.
It's a really rare DVD because they only made a certain amount of DVDs, and it's got its number such and such of such and such on the back.
Right, okay.
I think to buy it new on Amazon, it's over $100.
Oh.
Yeah.
Is that the one that has the cover of her flying, or the one where she's standing there with her hands on her hips?
It's of her flying, and it's got, like, the silver super symbol.
Yeah, I remember they'd sent, like, a handful of those down to Australia back when it first came out, and I remember seeing it in a shop and thinking I should get it, but I never did.
Yeah.
And then about a year later, I was, like, thinking I should get it, and I couldn't find it anywhere.
Yeah. I mean, they re-released, I think, Bare Bones Edition now.
Yeah,
but
they did.
This one, it's the rare copy. I like both versions of the movie.
Are they that different to each other?
There's extended scenes and added scenes.
Okay.
But I do enjoy watching both of them. I have watched them quite a few times. I haven't watched it that recently, though.
Yeah.
But I still actually get a lot out of it, and I just think it's still just a great, fun movie. You know, there's a lot better comic book movies, but this one, like I said, it's sentimental because I grew up with it, and as everyone knows, I love Supergirl, and I love Superman, and I love everything related to Super Family. So, that's my number 4. So,
awesome.
What's your number 3?
My number 3 is Interview with the Vampire.
Oh, I love this movie.
So you want me to tell you the story of my life? I'll tell you my story. I'll tell you all of it. I'm flesh and blood, but not human. I haven't been human for 200 years.
From the novel by Anne Rice. From Neil Jordan, the director of The Crying Game.
I've come to answer your prayers.
I love it. I've been watching it since I was a kid. It came out in, like, 94, I think.
Yeah, it was 94.
And it came out as a new release on video, and I saw it, and ever since then, I think I've probably watched it, like, 2 times a year, like, every year since.
Yeah, I only recently got it on DVD.
And did you still like it?
I loved it so much watching it again.
It's just awesome. It's probably my all-time favourite vampire movie, along with, like, other stuff like Bram Stoker's Dracula. I thought that was pretty cool. And that's all I can remember.
But well, my favourite vampire movie is Near Dark.
Near Dark, yeah, I've seen Near Dark.
Yeah. I think I edited out that silence.
Well, as for Interview with the Vampire, I think that the acting is awesome. I know that there was some controversy about Tom Cruise playing Lestat in it and how he wasn't right for the role, but even though he didn't look the part, I think that he definitely did a really good job playing it. The character in the books is really complicated, so
I can understand that
from what I've read, he had a really hard time like getting to grips with the character, and he said after filming the movie that he would never play Lestat again. So I think the fact that he did a pretty decent job of it is pretty good. And I think the standout out of the movie is definitely Kirsten Dunst.
Yeah, that was like one of her first movie roles.
Yeah, I remember seeing her for the first time, and I thought she was so cool in it. Interview with the Vampire.
Well, I think it's one of Tom's better roles, maybe one of my favourites that he's done. I thought he was just excellent in the movie.
Yeah.
And Brad Pitt is really good. Christian Slater is pretty good. Kirsten Dunst is really good. I mean, everyone's really good.
Everyone's good, yeah.
It's a great vampire movie. But it's just an altogether really just fantastic movie, and I love Neil Jordan movies.
Yeah, so do I. I think he does great movies. And I think Interview with the Vampire, another really strong thing about it is that has a really good atmosphere to it, and it has a really good score as well.
Like, yeah, yeah.
The music in it is great.
And at the end, Brad Pitt goes and watches Superman.
Yeah. Is that why you love it?
No. I actually didn't remember that bit until I watched it again when I got it at Sanity for like $10. So I've never been able to find it, and then they finally had it cheap, so I bought it. And it's got some really good commentary on there by Neil Jordan.
It does, yeah. I've heard the commentary. Yeah, it's got a good making of doc on it as well.
Yeah, it's all pretty good stuff.
Yeah.
So I definitely can't argue with that choice either.
Yes.
Because that's a fucking fantastic movie. I hesitated to swear then. It just comes out so naturally.
But it was too late. It just rolled out.
It just comes out so naturally, and I do try to hold back when we do the super podcast, but it's going to just get harder and harder to do.
You just can't help yourself.
No, I can't. So
what's your number three?
My number three is Blue Velvet.
From the mind of David Lynch comes a modern-day masterpiece, so startling, so provocative, so mysterious, that it will open your eyes to a world you have never seen before.
Got about 1 second to live, buddy.
Ooh, David Lynch.
David Lynch is my all-time favorite director, and Blue Velvet would be my all-time favorite David Lynch movie.
And why is that?
I think it has to do with maybe I think it might have been one of the first ones I'd seen. I think the first David Lynch movie I saw was Elephant Man, Eraserhead, and Blue Velvet.
Yeah.
It's just a film. I can seriously watch this all the time, and I have watched it quite a lot.
Yeah.
I watched it a few weeks ago, and it's just everything about it is amazing. Like, his use of colour in this movie, and just the way he films certain scenes, and the performances he gets out of everyone, because the movie can be quite disturbing.
It is. It's a bit twisted.
It's very twisted. It's David Lynch likes the whole small American town with a twist, and this one's got the murderous twist,
like,
and
dark secrets.
Dark secrets. Yeah. Everyone's kind of a quirky character. And it does star Kyle MacLachlan, who we talked about in our Showgirls podcast.
Of course.
And he was nice and young in this movie. He's quite cute in it, I've got to say. It's also got Laura Dern when she was really young.
And that's right, she's in it. I completely forgot she was in it.
Yeah, and it's got Isabella Rossellini in a very difficult role.
Naked in the bushes.
Yeah, she does. She's naked quite a bit in this movie. And it stars Dennis Hopper in one of his most famous roles as the crazy Frank Booth.
He was a psycho.
He was a freaking psycho, and I can quote a lot of his lines in this movie. He's amazing. Everything just about this movie is amazing. And there's so much I get out of it as well.
Yeah.
It's just...
Well, I think that's one thing about David Lynch movies is that you can watch them about 50 times and there's always something.
Yeah, you might have missed something that, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, this one is more linear. Like, it's a straight line story, unlike, say, Mulholland Drive.
Yeah.
But... I mean, for me, like, he can do a straight line story or he can do something like Mulholland Drive and I'll love it. Yeah. It's just the way he does things, the way he writes things. I love his movies. And, yeah, that one's definitely my favourite David Lynch movie.
Cool.
And I would highly recommend it if you haven't seen it. It's not an easy movie to watch, but
no, it's not.
As it unfolds, I think you get really drawn into it. Because it does start off when Kyle MacLachlan's character finds an ear. So
that's right. It's been ages since I've seen it, but I do like it.
Yeah, it's just... I just love it so much. Like, I'm just going to keep going on saying, I love it, I love it, I love it, I love it.
All right, number two then?
Number two. What's your number two?
All right, my second favorite movie of all time is The Exorcist.
The Exorcist.
Something beyond comprehension is happening to a little girl on this street, in this house. A man has been sent for as a last resort to try and save her.
I love this movie so much. I think that, I guess in case people haven't seen it, it's about a young girl who gets possessed by an evil spirit and is her mother trying to get the spirit out of her with the help of a couple of priests.
Yes, well, that's where the exorcist comes in. Because they have to exorcise the demons.
Now, the great thing about this movie is that it was made in the 70s, I think.
1973.
Yes. And to this day, if I sit down and if I actually, like, sit and watch it properly and turn all the lights out, it still creeps me out. It's completely over the top, but at the same time, I think that there's a lot of, like, really dark imagery in it, which I think helps kind of make it more serious when things get a little kooky.
Mm.
I think it's most famous for the fact that Reagan, who is the girl that gets possessed, has a pretty foul mouth.
Yes, and when the demon's inside her.
Yeah, and she does things like masturbates with a crucifix.
Yeah.
And talks about penises in hell and all sorts of colourful language.
Yeah, well, one I remember really well is I think she says something about... I can't remember if she's talking to her mum and she says something about her cunting daughter. I remember cunting daughter.
Yes.
Yeah. I saw this, I think it was maybe like 11 or 12, and it did not scare me.
Oh, really?
At all. No, I thought it was a really good movie. It didn't scare me. Oh. But then, like, afterwards, when we went to go to sleep, I started feeling weird, and I kept looking around like there was going to be, like, a demon to possess me.
So I guess technically you were scared.
I was scared afterwards. But then, like, I saw it again and again, and then I saw the version you've never seen, and I don't get scared, awesome. But I think it's just a great film.
Yeah, I mean, look, I can watch it and go to sleep and not have nightmares, but I still think it's still got a really creepy, strong vibe to it.
Yeah, it definitely, they did such a great job with this, and actually, I really love Exorcist Part 3.
Seen Exorcist Part 3.
That actually did creep me out.
That has got some scary stuff in it.
That it's definitely a very underrated movie.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's much better than Part 2, which was ridiculous.
Yeah, the less said about that, I think, the better.
Well, The Exorcist is my favourite horror movie of all time, so, yeah.
Yeah, it's quite a bit different than my favourite Reanimator. Mine's, like, not serious whatsoever.
So what's your number two?
My number two, and this goes back to kind of talking about your number five, is a Quentin Tarantino film. And that would be Reservoir Dogs, which you haven't seen.
Hey, your name, Mr. White, Mr. Blonde, Mr. Pink.
Why am I Mr. Pink?
Who cares what your name is?
Yeah, that's easy for you to say. You're Mr. White. You have a cool-sounding name.
That's not a word.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight. I got the feeling there's something right.
What happens if the manager won't give you the diamonds?
Cut off one of his fingers. The little one.
Yes, the only Quentin movie I've never seen.
Ugh, you crazy boy.
I know, I'm too scared to see it because the hype around it is so massive that I just don't know if it's going to work if I watch
it. Well, as you pointed out before, you're talking about Quentin Tarantino writing like a 10-minute long scene of just dialogue.
Yeah.
And Reservoir Dogs has a lot of that kind of stuff. But for me, just the stuff that they say in this movie, the conversations and the acting, I love everything about Reservoir Dogs. And I know this movie so well. I could act out this movie in a one-woman show. It is, for me, this is like, it's fantastic. Another movie, I can watch this all the time. And I've got the script as well. I love it.
Like a hard copy?
Yeah, yeah. Oh. An actual, like, in the book. Like, the book. Oh, and it's the script. I just, there's just something about Reservoir Dogs. I just love it so much. I love everything. I mean, you got, your characters aren't exactly likable.
Yeah.
But they just all have this really bizarre charm to them.
What's it about? I don't actually even know what it's
about. Well, it's about these guys, they go to do a diamond heist, right? And you don't actually see the diamond heist. You see the events leading up to it, and then you see the stuff that happens directly after it. But it's all kind of in bits and pieces, like in flashbacks. And and what actually happens is the heist doesn't go to plan, and they believe that they were set up. So they go back to their rendezvous point, and they kind of try and work out what in the world was going on, what happened, is there a rat in the house?
Yeah.
And some of them, we find out, got killed at the heist.
Okay.
And one of them has been shot, and he just lies bleeding for a lot of the movie. And that would be Mr. Orange, played by Tim Roth, who's one of my all-time favorite actors.
Awesome.
Yeah. And also this movie's got Harvey Keitel as Mr. White. It's got Steve Buscemi as Mr. Pink.
Yeah.
It's got Quentin Tarantino as Mr. Brown. Michael Madsen, who was also in Kill Bill 2, as Mr. Blonde.
Yeah.
It has Chris Penn as well.
Has it got any girls in it?
No. It's all, it's a man's movie.
Okay.
Who else is in it? It's got, I think it's Eddie Bunker, who's passed away as well, and Lawrence Tierney, who I think's passed away as well, and Chris Penn, who's passed away. So a few people have passed away. And, yeah, it's also got, like, a radio DJ voice that you hear all through the movie, which is really cool stuff as well. And it's my all-time favorite movie soundtrack. I love Quentin Tarantino's movie soundtrack, so this one's the number one for sure.
Yeah.
It's just, it's such a great movie.
Awesome.
Yeah, I would say watch it and just try and ignore everything, all the hype around it if you can.
I will. I definitely want to see it. It's been one that I've been meaning to watch for like 10 years.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when I first tried to watch it, a lot of the dialogue kind of threw me and I switched it off. Yeah. But I think I was too young to kind of understand what was going on.
Yeah.
Then I kind of went back to it like a year later and I just was blown away.
Awesome.
And yeah, I watch it all the time ever since. Yeah. Reservoir Dogs.
Reservoir Dogs.
Number two. So what's your number one?
My number one it's a well-known movie and it's well-liked, but it's probably not what people would put as their number one usually. But it is Girl Interrupted.
In 1969, the Wild Ones went to Woodstock. The Unlucky Ones went to war.
Something happening here.
But if you didn't know where you were going,
you have the distinction of being the only senior not going on to college.
I don't have a plan. I just don't want to end up like my mother.
Susanna!
They sent you to Claymore.
The best place in the world for someone like you is less than a half an hour from here.
Welcome to Claymore, Susanna. It's so easy to
slip. I guess I'm puzzled as to why it is I have to be in a mental institution.
Call me a cab.
Okay, you're a cab. You chased a bottle of aspirin with a bottle of vodka.
I had a headache.
Go ahead, take one step and I'll jam this in my aorta.
Lisa, your aorta is in your chest.
Good to know.
Starring Winona Ryder and, of course, Angelina Jolie, which was her big movie where she became a household name overnight and won an Academy Award and made me completely fall in love with her.
Yeah.
I remember seeing this for the first time. My friend and I skipped school and we rented it because it was a new release.
Yeah.
Didn't know anything about it and we watched it and it was probably one of the best moments I've ever had watching a movie.
Really?
I was laughing so much. I was in love with all the characters and I thought Angelina was just incredible in it.
Yeah, I agree. She was. I haven't seen it for a long time though.
How many times have you seen it?
I've seen it a couple of times.
Okay.
This has been many years.
The movie is about a girl who gets put into a mental institution because her parents think that there's something wrong with her because she tried to kill herself.
Mm.
And it's basically about the relationship that she develops there with another patient and what goes on with all the girls that are there and like their lives and stuff like that. So
yeah.
It's a drama.
Yeah, it definitely is. But it's got
the great thing,
a lot of, you know, it does have funny moments, but it's also very serious.
Yeah, it's, I guess in a way, at times, it's a bit of a black comedy.
Mm.
It's got some really quotable lines, and it's got some really funny characters. So I think that's, I mean, I think the story itself is quite serious, but the characters are a bit quirky.
Yeah.
I think people would remember Brittany Murphy.
I was going to say, Daisy. I remember Brittany Murphy in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brittany Murphy, the anorexic who would live off chicken.
Yeah.
Her dad would always bring a chicken. So it's just like weird stuff like that. But yeah, it's a movie I've seen like 1,000 times. And it's, I'm just completely obsessed with it. I love it to death. And I've always recommended it to people and they've always enjoyed it.
Yeah, well, I really liked it the first time I saw it. Then I ended up watching it again, and I think I liked it even more.
Yeah.
There's just so much to get out of this movie as well.
Yeah.
But Angelina was definitely the standout in the movie.
Yeah.
She had a tough character to play, and she nailed it.
She did nail it. Winona Ryder was good as well.
Yeah, not to take anything away from her, but...
No.
Angelina's the one you remember from this movie.
Yeah, it's hard not to, because the character's just so in your face.
Mm.
So,
yeah.
Girl Interrupted.
Girl Interrupted, number one, favourite movie. My number one.
Now, what is yours?
Now, this goes back to being a sentimental movie, and it would be Stand By Me.
Yes.
It's my all-time favourite movie, and it's always going to be my all-time favourite movie.
In all our lives, there's a fall from innocence, a time after which we are never the same. It happened in the summer of 1959. A long time ago.
Oh, man! Where do you hear this? Where do you hear this?
What is it, man?
You guys want to go see a dead body?
When the night has come and the land is dark.
We interrupt to bring you an update on the search for the missing 12-year-old Ray Brower.
Kid's gone. They're never going to find him.
Not where they're looking.
And the moon is the only light we'll see.
You think Mighty Mouse could beat up Superman?
Mighty Mouse is a cartoon. Superman is a real guy. No way a cartoon could beat up a real guy.
I have seen it.
You have seen it.
I have seen
it. I grew up watching this movie. I used to watch this movie, seriously, every single weekend when I was growing up. Me and my cousin or me and my friend would watch this movie every single week. And I, again, it's another movie. I know it off by heart.
Yeah.
I quote it all the time. I actually go on my Facebook and put in Stand By Me quotes and maybe one person will understand that's what I'm going on about. Everyone else has no idea. it's if, like growing up, I really sort of related to the characters in the movie.
Yeah.
And, you know, because it's a coming of age story for four boys when they're 12.
Yeah.
And especially when I was 12 at that age. It meant a lot to me, and I think I owe who I am today this movie, really.
That's a big call.
Yeah, like, and also, like, when I was kind of at the 12, 13-year-old stage, I was madly in love with Kiefer Sutherland, and that was another reason why I used to watch this movie all the time. It's like his first movie. I think he's, like, 17 in it.
Yeah, I remember him in it.
And he was just, like, the most gorgeous thing ever at the time for me. So he used to get me coming back to watching it a lot as well. And it's also in the book Different Seasons by Stephen King as a novella, which features Shawshank Redemption as well.
Okay.
So, I ended up reading it around the same time as when I saw, like, the Shawshank Redemption, because I was reading that as well.
Yeah.
And I got to say, like, usually the book is better than the film, but in this case, the film outdoes the source material.
Oh, awesome.
And I think even Stephen King admits that, like, Rob Reiner just took it to another level. And
well,
it's just amazing for me, this movie.
I've only ever seen it, I think, like, I remember seeing it once, but I think I saw it before then as a kid, but I couldn't remember it.
Mm.
And I don't remember a lot of it because I saw it, like, it was like 10 years ago. But I do remember liking it. And I also remember Jerry O'Connell's in it, and I think he's really fat in it.
Yeah, he was the fat kid. And I remember when they debuted Sliders, he was on it.
Yeah.
And it took me, like, halfway through the episode to realize he was the fat kid in Stand By Me. And I just about freaked out, and then I was totally in love with him when I was, you know, younger. But it's also got River Phoenix, who I've been in love with since I can remember.
And yeah, it's... I've never really, like... I think he's a good actor, but I've never really caught on to this whole River Phoenix thing. But people are still really obsessed with him.
Well, I was in love with him when I was, like, 4 years old. And when he died, I was completely devastated.
Oh, no.
And I still put him up there.
How old were you when he died?
Probably, like, 9.
Oh, okay.
He died, like, 2 days after my birthday, so... Yeah. I still classify him as one of my all-time favourite actors.
Yeah.
And he is amazing in this movie. He really, really is. And it's also got Corey Feldman.
Yes, I remember him.
And it's got Will Wheaton, who people probably know as being in Star Trek. And as I said, Kiefer Sutherland, and the narration is by Richard Dreyfuss.
Oh, okay.
So... I mean, if anyone hasn't seen this movie, there's something wrong with you.
yeah, it is one of the... I mean, I may not remember it, but I at least took the time to watch it, because it's one of those movies that is so well known.
It's about, like, four boys. They're about 12 years old.
Yeah.
And they hear about a dead body, and what they do is they want to go find it, and they think that they'll be heroes for finding it. But, of course, lots of different things happen. And, actually, the movie kind of... is one of the boys, he's older, and he's writing about, you know, this time in his life.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, it's really... It's just done so well. It's not even a long movie. I think it's, like, not even an hour and a half.
Yeah.
But everything in it, it's just amazing. I can't say enough good things about this movie, because it's just that fantastic. And it's my all-time favourite movie, and I do think it's one of the best movies ever made.
Awesome.
So it would definitely be on my list of the best movies ever made.
It's your number one?
It's my number one.
Well, I guess I'm going to just quickly read out the remainder of my top 10.
Yeah.
Just in case anyone wants to know.
Yes, the full top 10.
Yeah, so my top 5 were Kill Bill Volume 2, Closer, Exorcist, Interview with the Vampire, and Girl Interrupted. Number 6 would be Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring. Technically, it would be all three movies, but if I had to pick one, that would be my favourite.
Yeah.
Number 7 would be Leon.
I love that movie.
It's awesome. Other people may know it as The Professional.
Yeah.
Cool movie. Number 8 would be Bram Stoker's Dracula, which I mentioned before.
Yeah.
Number 9 would be The Ring, but the remake of The Ring with Naomi Watts.
Mm-hmm.
And number 10 would be The Doom Generation, which is probably a movie not everybody knows.
I saw it a long time ago.
Yeah, but it stars Rose McGowan, and it's a Greg Araki film, so it's pretty indie and, you know, low-key. But yeah, that's my top.
Yeah, well, I can't really do a top 10.
Yeah.
I have too many favourite movies, but they'd probably, like, include maybe, like, Near Dark is one of my all-time favourites, and... Ugh, anything by David Lynch.
Yeah,
maybe Mulholland Drive, Lost Highway, Wild at Heart, or, you know, David Cronenberg with Videodrome, or The Dead Zone, or Crash.
You like Eyes Wide Shut as well?
Yeah, love Eyes Wide Shut, and Full Metal Jacket. I could just go on for another half an hour just naming my favourite movies, but yeah, they're like some of the ones I really, really love.
Yeah.
But yeah, but that is our top five films of all time discussion.
It is.
It is indeed. So hopefully everybody's got something out of it.
Yeah.
And hopefully we've been entertaining.
Hopefully.
Hopefully. So until next time, I am Super Marcy.
And I am Steven.
And we will talk to you again.
Bye, guys.
See ya.
Look, it, I'm not going to bullshit you, okay? I don't really give a good fuck what you know or don't know. But I'm going to torture you anyway. Regardless, I have to get information. It's amusing to me to torture a cop. You can say anything you want, because I've heard it all before. All you can do is pray for a quick death, which you ain't gonna get. Listen to Kay Billy's Super Sounds of the 70s. It's my personal favorite.
Joe Egan and Jerry Rafferty were a duo known as Dealer's Wheel when they recorded this Dylan-esque pop bubblegum favorite from April of 1974. That reached up to number five. Oh. K. Billy Super Sounds of the 70s continue.
Oh. Well, I don't know why I came here tonight. I got the feeling of something ain't right. I'm so scared. Oh. Chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you. Yes, I'm stuck in the middle. And I'm wondering how you're doing. It's so hard to keep this smile from my face.
Hold still.
Hold still,
yeah.